Redbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota on Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit toyotaonnicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.
Welcome to Beneath the Surface, my fellow truth seekers, where faith and reason meets here at WCAP Radio. Glad you could join us. We're here from 10 to 11 p.m. every Monday evening as usual, bringing a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Before I introduce to you my guest and our topic tonight, ladies and gentlemen, there she is, your producer and mine, Miss Cindy.
Hi.
You don't have a last name tonight, Cindy.
Nope.
No, you're just Miss Cindy. How you doing? Good week?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah, good week. All right.
It was a good week. I did a lot of stuff.
Oh, stuff is good to do. I did a lot of non-stuff.
Why?
I don't know. I was tired of stuff. So I figured, I'm tired of stuff. I want to do non-stuff. You know what I'm talking about, Bob?
Yes, I think
yeah.
I do.
Okay, yeah. I figured you would.
Yeah, Is it sloth that's rearing its ugly head here?
Sloth?
Sloth?
Is it sloth or sloth?
I've heard both. I've heard both. So, I've heard people use sloth, but I've also heard sloth. Actually, I've heard the word sloth in the confessional.
Well,
you slothful person, you.
Yeah, you know, the goal is to somehow find yourself in between slothful and your average American who's always running around with his head, like a chicken with his head cut off.
Very, very workaholic-ish. Yes.
Workaholic-ish and always doing. And if he's not working, you know, just seek the next piece of noise, whether it be, internet or television or radio or what have you.
That suggests another show topic.
It is.
The topic of leisure, which is not what most people think it is.
Yeah. And you know what? I would also like to do another topic, which is kind of a subtopic of that, and that is the beauty of silence.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
We do need silence.
We do. And for a show, we'll just be silent the entire hour. Would that work on radio?
No, I don't think it would work on radio.
No? Oh. Gosh, then we can't illustrate it then.
Yeah, we can't illustrate it. That's the problem. We'd have to do it as a TV show.
Yeah, just sit there.
Just sit there. Well, we would show signs or something like that, and it would be so slow that in the silence, in the intervening time between our communicating, there would be, a chance for them to think about what we're saying, which would be a very good use of silence.
Absolutely. Well, there he is, ladies and gentlemen, your guest and mine, Mr. Bob LeBlanc. Bob, welcome to Beneath the Surface.
Thank you, Paul, for having me on the show.
What's it like being beneath that surface?
Wow.
And that's in that beneath the surface chair.
I think I'm out of orbit, you know.
Good. Whatever that means.
Well, that's actually a bad thing, I think, because the problem in being in orbit means that you have to re-entry. And re-entry is usually a problem for fallen human beings.
Re-entering.
Yes. You could burn up.
You know, that's
crash and burn.
That's an awesome metaphor.
It is.
Yeah, so if you get off track and you get really off track, it's very difficult to get back on.
Yes. Yes,
but
it is.
But very possible and very obligatory.
I think it kind of is a tie-in to our topic here.
It is. Well, why don't I introduce that, because I just introduced you. Our subtitle for the show tonight on Beneath the Surface is Lost in the Cosmos, Why Man is Going Through an Identity Crisis.
Yes.
That is quite a mindful. I was going to say a mouthful, but that's quite a mindful.
It is a mindful.
Lost in the Cosmos, Why Man is Going Through an Identity Crisis. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. Hope you get in touch with us during our conversation here at Beneath the Surface. 978-454-4980. Paul Morano, as usual, talking to my second week of the month guest, Mr. Bob LeBlanc, not to be confused with Bob LeBlanc.
Yeah, on Saturdays, I think, right?
I believe so, if things are the same
as
they used to be. And you can either give us a call or just make an anonymous comment on Facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. That's all one word, fellow truth seekers.
Can you make an anonymous comment on Facebook?
Well, your handle comes up, your Facebook name.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily give you away, does it?
It could for some people.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So make a non-anonymous comments.
It'll be anonymous on the show. Maybe that's what you mean.
Yes, we won't. We won't mention it on the show unless. We could mention it on the show, but we won't mention who said it.
Right.
Yeah. Just the comment itself, perhaps. So Facebook.com/fellowtruthseekers. Anywhere on that page, give us a comment or 978-454-4980. You can get in touch with us live as we speak. All right, Mr. Bobbert, Lost in the Cosmos, Why Man is Going Through an Identity Crisis. Where would you like to begin on this very interesting topic?
Well, I think the answer to the title is scriptural. And we begin at the beginning in Scripture. But I also would like to talk...
So in other words, you need faith to answer this question.
I guess the thing that I wish to express about this, I didn't know when I was like maybe in a state of lapsing as a Catholic.
Okay.
And going and becoming a true lapsed Catholic, I looked at Genesis and, you know, this is like a fairy tale sort of stuff. It doesn't correspond with reality. It's not a literal history. I mean, Catholics would admit that it's not a historical account the way we moderns would see a historical account.
Not in the scientific way that we understand precision and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
However, there's a however to that.
I became very intrigued with the theology of the body and Pope John Paul II's exposition of that. And I found him. He kept on going to Genesis, and he was like, he was going there really deep, and he was finding truths in there that just amazed me. And every time now that I go to Genesis, I go, wow, this is speaking the truth about man, about God's relationship with man. So there's
about man's relationship with woman.
With woman, yes.
About man's relationship with the environment.
Yes, there's
all of that is right there in that story.
It's
very profound.
It's very profound and it's very rich. I mean, you can continue to mine this story for.
You'll always find something.
You'll
true
find something
and true and different every time you read it.
And you're right. You do need to see this with kind of the eyes of faith, because that's how, if you believe that Genesis is speaking the truth to you, then you start seeing these truths come out. And one of the things I want to do is compare Genesis with the parable of the prodigal son.
All right, so let's start with the beginning. Obviously, the book of Genesis begins with those three words, in the beginning.
Yes.
Let's start with the first three chapters of the book of Genesis, which relate to the beginning of the world and the beginning of mankind.
Yeah.
You're going to relate this to how we are lost in the cosmos and going through an identity crisis.
Right, and I'm going to interpret that through
Okay.
The parable of the prodigal son. I want to look at both of these two pieces of scripture side by side because I see parallels in there that can tell us something about our being lost in the cosmos.
Okay.
I'm not sure how to proceed here. Would you want me to give the basics of the story, or should I just go into the parallels here?
Well, I think most people know the basics of the story. Is there anything that you want to lay as a foundation to this topic?
We'll start at the beginning with Genesis.
Yeah.
And we have God creating man and woman in His image. And the parallel that I see in the parable of the prodigal son is that there's a man with two sons.
Yes.
And so what I'm seeing here, the parallel, I want to bring this out, is that if we're in God's image, then in some certain sort of sense, we are sons and daughters of God.
So let's unpack that a little bit.
Okay.
Somebody gets married and has a son. You would say that that child is in the image of the father? Is that what you...
And the mother as well.
And the mother, yeah.
So there's something of both the father and the mother in the offspring that they cause by procreation.
Okay, so then what are you saying about being in the image of... I mean, we already know we're in the image of the earth in one sense because we are earthmen.
Right.
The word Adam comes from, you know, the ground. We come from the earth.
Right, right.
So in that sense, we do image our mother, if you will, and I put that in quotes.
Yes.
Because our mother is the earth.
Well, I've heard that analogy used quite often. God, the Father.
Sure.
And then Mother Earth. Yeah.
Loves the earth, and through the earth, we human beings are born.
Right.
Okay. So then we image the earth in as much as we are earth creatures. We image God the Father in as much as we are spiritual, we have intellect and will, and we are persons.
Well, that talks about a kind of an Aristotelian image of man. We are both spiritual souls and we have physical bodies. So there's that combination that's there.
Most people throughout human history have believed that, explicitly or implicitly.
Well, very good. I would think that some people would deny that.
Well, the problem is though that
if you're atheists.
I mean, there haven't been that many comparatively. There haven't been that many atheists throughout human history. That's
true.
The thing. There have been a good amount in modern times, but not throughout human history. I mean, from the beginning, every tribe, every budding state or nation, every even empire had their religion that people abided by and believed in. So what I'm saying is that what am I saying? What were we getting back to?
Well, we're talking about how we are children of God.
Oh, the spirit and body. Yeah, most people believe that human beings have a spiritual dimension to them, whether they're ancestor worshippers or they worship many gods as in ancient times, or they worship one god as in modern times. That the distinction between people, most people, is that some people believe that we are simply the soul, which is just encased by an accidental covering, if you will, what we call the body, but it's not really essential to us because we're really what we are inside.
Yeah.
And we see that sort of coming out in modern times and things like transgenderism and being able to manipulate yourself for various purposes. And then there's those folks who believe that we are body-soul composites.
Right.
And that's basically what Christians and Jews believe, that we're body-soul composites.
Well, the third part, I'm not sure if you said this, is the people who believe that we're mere matter.
Purely material. Absolutely. That's number three.
So the hylomorphic combination is kind of between the two extremes.
Yeah, hylomorphism, which means that we are both body and soul. The soul is the very form of the body, and we're meant to be both spiritual and physical, body and soul. That's hylomorphism.
Right.
Dualism is that we're just soul, and the body is just along for the ride. It's temporary, and it's not really necessary.
Right.
And of course, materialism is simply that we're just bodies that become part of the dirt after a few decades, and we are, the person is annihilated.
Shall we continue?
I just wanted to get that on the table because
okay.
Most people do believe that we have a spiritual dimension.
We've got the music here.
All right, so where do you want to go after the break?
I want to talk about inheritance.
Okay.
That's from the prodigal son, but there's the idea of inheritance found kind of lightly in the Bible. In Genesis.
Okay, inheritance coming up. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. After the break, we go beneath the surface with my guest, Mr. Bob LeBlanc. Be right back. Okay, we're back. We're back. Beneath the Surface, WCAP. We're talking with Bob LeBlanc on the topic of Lost in the Cosmos, Why Man is Going Through an Identity Crisis. And before the break, we were talking about, we were about to get into what is meant by why we're lost and why we have an identity crisis. And we just went a little bit about how most people have thought, what the human being is, the three basic ways that people have thought what the human being is, materialism, dualism, or hylomorphism. Bible believers, by and large, by that we are hylomorphic, that we're both body, soul, spiritual, and material beings. Now, as Bob mentioned, we not only image the earth in as much as we're physical and we're earth creatures, but as the scripture says in Genesis chapter 1, verses 26 to 28, we image God as persons. We have a spiritual component to the human person, which makes us persons like God is, eternal and perfect, tripersonal. Bob.
All righty. Very good. Thank you, Paul. So we wanted to talk about inheritance. And in the parable of the prodigal son, one of the sons goes to his father, and he says, I would like to get my inheritance. And to me, a lot of times they say maybe a little bit differently. They don't actually use the word inheritance, but that's what he was asking for. He was asking
from his father, who was not dead.
Who was not dead, yes.
He was very much alive.
And so the thing that's important here, I think, is that he wants to get what he's due anyways, but he wants to grab after it.
He wants to grab after it in his own time and in his own way.
Yes, absolutely.
I see where you're going with the Genesis story.
Yes, absolutely. And so what happens? The serpent goes up to Eve,
yeah,
and he says, he talks about eating the forbidden fruit,
and seduces her
and says, you will be like God. And the interesting thing is it's not explicit in Genesis, but this is what the entire gospel is about, is that it's talking about two Greek terms here, kenosis, an emptying of God empties himself, in order for theosis, so God becomes man in order
so
that man becomes like God.
Yes. So one could interpret that Genesis story with the serpent as God creating man in his image, and God was going to give man all of these spiritual gifts to make him, among other things, immortal.
Right.
And perfect in his own human nature. Those gifts were going to be given to mankind in God's time and in God's way.
Right.
But here comes the serpent saying, wait a minute. Go for it. Go for it yourself. Do it your own way.
Yes,
and do
absolutely.
It, and do it now, away from God. You don't want to be under his thumb.
Right, right. And he actually entices, Eve and therefore Adam to disobey God.
Yeah, so in that sense, man was seeking, after he was convinced by the serpent, he was seeking his quote-unquote inheritance earlier than he should have.
Right.
Just like the
Well, here's
terrible.
Here's the thing I think a lot of people don't get about life.
What's
it's a
that?
Process.
Yes.
It's a process. And certain things, I mean, you see it in kids all the time. They'll say, why can't I stay up late to watch TV? Why can't I drive the car? Why can't I do this, that, or the other thing? They want everything now, you know.
Yes.
They want it before their time, before they're ready, before they're judged ready to do all these various things, you know.
Good points. And you could say that Adam and Eve were the same way.
Yes.
In that respect. They wanted it now. They wanted it their way. And they didn't start off that way, but they were seduced by the serpent who made them think that way.
Right. And I think it shows kind of how easy it is to be tempted.
Now, yeah, I mean, just look at the media, what it's doing to young people, right?
Right,
you can see the serpent going through the media.
Right. And the thing is that we know that after the fall, we became more susceptible to that temptation.
Yes. Oh, yes. Because we were weakened.
Yes.
Yeah. And so now, it's much easier for us to fall, being in the weakened state, than Adam was in his stronger state.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so what happens in the story of the prodigal son? He goes out and he spends all his inheritance. He wastes it.
This is after getting the father capitulated. Okay.
The father gave him the inheritance he asked for.
Yeah.
And he just threw it all away. And then a family.
And scripture says on what? On prostitutes and high living and.
Yes, that sort of thing. Yeah.
All the sensual appetites.
And so then scripture says a very, I think, important line for us here in this show.
Okay.
Then he came to himself.
Who did?
The prodigal son. Then he came to himself. Just slowly read that. Then he came to himself.
He recognized something about himself?
Yes. He came to himself. He started to recognize the self that he had lost.
Hmm.
And it goes on further. The prodigal son says, I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Here's shame.
In that sense, he lost his true identity.
He did. But there's in his shame.
Yes.
The turning back, the coming back.
Yes.
To your identity, and
so without shame, you don't come back to your proper identity.
You don't. I mean, this is when he decided, I'm going to come back to my father.
Then why are so many people hiding from or running away from the possibility of shame?
Well, that's in Genesis.
Okay.
So after both Adam and Eve consume the forbidden fruit.
Yeah, we'll go back to that.
Yeah. Scripture says that they hid themselves.
Yeah.
And to me, that shows an understanding or realization of shame. So
there wasn't anybody to hide themselves from other than God himself.
Right.
So the implication there was they ran or they were hiding from God.
Yes.
And isn't that what so many people do after they sin psychologically?
Right.
They run from God.
You may point that to that point that piece of scripture and say, this is what atheists are doing. They're saying, I can't find God. They can't find God because they're hiding from God.
They're actively hiding without recognizing it?
Yes. Yes.
Hmm. They're Genesis chapter 3 of Adam and Eve hiding in the woods, metaphorically.
Yes.
Okay.
So, and then after that point of shame, that's when you can get a return here. And so, what happens? The prodigal son goes back to the father. And the lovely thing I think about the prodigal son is it says, while the son was still far away, the father saw him and ran
in the distance.
So, here's the thing is that we can sin, and sin is a bad thing.
Yes.
But, like you discussed in your prior show with Kent, you know, there's God's mercy is just waiting on the other side of this.
Yes.
And so the same sort of promise was made in Genesis. You know, there's the in the return. What you have in the prodigal son is there's a feast that happens.
Because the son is lost and now he's found.
Absolutely. That is the words, the very words I wanted to use here. He was lost and then he was found.
And so that's worth a big celebration.
That's worth a big, huge celebration here.
Okay.
In Genesis, the parallel that I see in here is the promise that the offspring of the woman, of Eve, would crush the head of the serpent. The serpent is evil here.
Yes.
So there's a defeat
of evil. And that's in Genesis chapter 3.
Yes,
verse,
chapter 3.
15 or 16. 15, yeah.
15, yes, I wrote
it's
that down.
Called the Proto-Evangelium. That's when God predicts the victory over sin. That unfortunately, the devil had the victory that day.
Right.
But he was predicting the future victory of mankind.
And so, tying these both things together is what I see in Genesis and in the prodigal son is that there is a loss of identity in turning away from God, disobeying God.
There you okay? That's what I was wondering. That's really the bottom line of this show. That there's by turning away from God, there is a loss of identity.
Yes.
Okay, we need to ponder that. Why?
Why?
Aren't we, in a sense, radical individuals who have our own identity by virtue of just being us?
Well, I would say no, but I'm not sure if I could give a very good explanation of why we can. I could take a stab at it, and I don't know if this is right.
Yeah.
The two great commandments, which can be folded into one, is love thy neighbor and love God.
The other way around, but yes.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
And the way we, the main way that we, well, most of the instances we illustrate our love of God is by showing love of neighbor. And
except, of course, the more direct religious things.
Right.
Our practices and so forth.
But even like in our worship, we worship in a communal way.
That's right.
And we direct our worship toward God.
Yeah.
So it's very definitely true that radical individualism is wrong in that sense that man is a social animal. But where radical individualism really goes wrong is that it's a self-love. It's more of a self-love.
Yeah.
Than it is a love of other, which we need to be able to do.
So then those who are walking around today, who loving themselves,
right?
And I guess I put that in quotes, because if they're not loving others, can they really be loving themselves? But let's just say that they're taking care of...
Well, there is a paradox here, I think. I think there's... one of the things I've been noticing a lot lately is that there are these, like, ironies or paradoxes... Like the snake promising that you will be like gods.
Yeah.
This is a promise that is carried out by Christ on his cross and resurrection and his death and resurrection.
Hmm.
That we will become
divinized.
Like divinized.
Yeah.
And we're in the process even now through our Christian faith of becoming divinized.
And through the sacraments.
Through the sacraments.
That God is imparting divine grace to all those who receive them.
So it's to me, it strikes me with all these ironies within the Bible that you know, these sorts of things, if you just looked at it a slightly different way, yes, it's true. You know, the bad thing that was promised is the good thing that is carried out by God.
Well, if I could just take a half a step to the side and give you an example of that.
Sure.
The two trees that were mentioned in the Garden of Eden story, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, which was forbidden.
Right.
And the tree of life, which, of course, they were supposed to eat from. Well, when they ate from the wrong tree, from the tree of death, they were forbidden from eating from the tree of life.
Because they might eat of the tree of life,
yes. So they were forbidden from the garden. And what did Christ come to do? He took that tree of life, metaphorically, he took that tree of life all the way up Mount Calvary.
He did.
And he became the hanging fruit of the new tree of life on
yes.
Mount Calvary.
Absolutely.
And in Holy Communion, Catholics and Eastern Orthodox are able to pick from that tree of life that originally was in the Garden of Eden to consume the fruit of the tree of life so that we may have divine life and eventual immortality in us.
So here would be the question here, Paul. Why?
Yes.
Why did God kick Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden? And I claimed before the show, and I will say it was a gift.
Yeah.
God gave us a gift by kicking us out. And I think we've already covered why that would be a gift. I mean, certainly... there when we are punished by our parents and stuff like that, we don't see it as a gift. We see, oh no, you know, I'm being hurt and stuff. But the entire thing that's happening here is to prepare us, to make us better. It's done out of love. And so God forbidding us to eat from the tree of life yeah. immediately after we sinned was in order that he might prepare us for the tree of life when Christ...
So we need special preparation after sin?
Absolutely. I think. Well, we need special preparation. Period. I think.
Well, could you make an analogy here of a parent who says, "Go to bed without supper." After they did something wrong.
Right.
In a sense, we cannot eat from the tree of life after we sinned.
Right.
So, but it serves as a punishment and as a medicine, right?
Right.
For what we did, so that eventually we can come and feast again.
Right. Absolutely. And one of the things we were talking about is that gives the person, the child, a chance to reflect
yes.
on his sin.
Yes.
And think about it in order to say, well, maybe I shouldn't do that, whatever thing I was.
And who was it that said that God speaks to us in various ways, but he shouts to us through suffering?
That was C.S. Lewis.
Yeah. Yeah. And we wouldn't suffer if we were still in the garden.
True.
Which means in our sinful state, we may never hear God.
Right. And it also shows that suffering is the medicine.
Suffering is the medicine this side of Eden.
Right.
Okay, so another segment to go, Beneath the Surface, here at WCAP. Paul Morano here with Mr. Bob LeBlanc, Cindy behind the glass. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Is our phone number, my fellow truth seekers. Glad you could stay with us. One more segment. We're here till 11 o'clock, and then the magic happens with Cindy's Vinyl Vault. But until then, Beneath the Surface with my guest, Mr. Bob LeBlanc, and we're talking about the topic, Lost in the Cosmos, Why Man is Going Through an Identity Crisis. Okay. So Bob, what do you were saying something during the break about grasping?
Yes, well, we talked about the grasping in the beginning of Genesis and in the parable of the prodigal son. The problem here is that when we seek to possess something, when we really want some desire
yes.
something, it becomes like a god to us and it actually enslaves us, that this seeking to possess things actually turns out to enslave us. And I think that is so well demonstrated in The Lord of the Rings with the character Gollum. And Peter Kraft actually noticed one thing about the character Gollum. What Gollum wanted, he wanted the ring. He called it my precious. And everything was in relationship with my precious.
Mm.
And Peter Kraft noticed a very, very interesting thing about this character Gollum. He didn't use the word I.
Hmm.
And so he became all consumed and he became enslaved to the ring. There was nothing else for him.
Hmm.
Now the other characters, there were other characters in the Lord of the Rings, we won't mention them directly, but they did the opposite of that. They gave of themselves. which is the sort of thing that you hear talked about in John Paul's the second, the theology of the body, this gift of self, this giving of self.
Yeah.
And that's how you really establish a relationship, if you see the two people giving of themselves, so that there's you're making a gift to yourself, so there's a love that comes between the both of you.
What's interesting about, among a million other things, what's interesting about our culture is that we tend to look for relationships and, ultimately marriage as what we can get out of it.
Yes, absolutely.
And we're almost formed in that kind of mentality.
Right.
I mean, with little girls, it's, finding my prince. With guys, it's finding my gorgeous bikini woman.
Trophy wife.
So it's, what can I get out of this? Is if you go into any kind of real relationship, which marriage is supposed to be, with that attitude, you will never be happy.
Right.
You'll never be happy.
You'll always be
grasping.
Because these limited things cannot be a substitute for God, which is what our real desire is.
And what you said earlier, that happiness doesn't come from what can I get.
Right.
It's how can I give.
Right.
And that's difficult for us, particularly us males, to recognize.
Yes, yes. This is something that I've been slowly comprehending myself. I in my conversion story that I gave on air, I talked about this very, very small thing that I did, where I helped this obvious handicapped woman get up out of her pew and go on the communion line.
Yes.
And the thought came to me, this is what you should be doing.
That little thing made you happy.
That little thing made me happy. It was like, well, I know it's not the greatest thing in the world, but it's like...
So if we can look at things like relationships and marriage and everything else we do as let's see, what can I give rather than what can I get, we won't be disappointed.
Right.
Because we won't be looking for, did I get it? Did I not get it? I'm so depressed. I always wanted this.
And the other thing is this is what Christ actually showed us by his death on the cross.
Yeah.
He gave of himself totally. I mean, the entire story of the incarnation, then winding up in the climax of the crucifixion, that is God just completely giving of himself to us and to the Father.
Yeah, and of course, Scripture also mentions that relationship between Christ and his church is analogous to that between a husband and wife, that they are supposed to fully and completely give themselves to one another, to the point of death if necessary. But anyway, this gets back to what we were talking about earlier about finding our identity. It's not in grasping. It's not in everything that we've been taught by our cultural attitude of going and getting all the gusto. You only live once. Go for it. All of this nonsense. It's actually in relationship, and the giving to the others is where we find our actual identity, is it not?
Right. I posted something on Facebook. It's very, very, very short. I was riffing off of the scriptures saying, the truth will set you free. And I said, more important than knowing what the truth is knowing who the truth is.
Yeah.
And astute Christians will know that Christ referred to himself as the way, the truth, and the life. It's actually having that personal relationship with the truth that is so important for us to be able to find ourselves.
Okay, so having a relationship with the truth, capital T.
Right.
And having a relationship with others in community is where we find our identity. It's not looking in the mirror. It's not self-reflection. It's in relationships. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. In loving relationships. I mean...
In relationships that you give yourself.
That you give yourself.
As a part of it.
What you find, I think, if you try to look for self without that relationship, you enter into a very dark place.
Yes.
You look at yourself and
there's not much there.
There's not much there. And in fact... define self, define I. Yeah. You can't. You really cannot do that.
If you look at God Himself, the eternal reality Himself, He is three I's.
Right.
Not E Y E S, but the letter I,
yes.
apostrophe S. He's three persons, which get their eternal and infinite and perfect identity in relation to each other.
Right. And in fact, that's
And if He is reality, what does that say about us?
Right. We're something short of that reality.
But we can only understand ourselves and our identities reflecting that reality, right?
Right, right. That comes back to us in our relationship with Christ. And this is one of the things that Lost in the Cosmos, it was a book written by Walker Percy.
Okay.
And it was subtitled The Last Self-Help Book. And we, as Christians, we know that we can't help ourselves. The heresy is known as Pelagianism.
I think every self or Alcoholics Anonymous and other addictive groups understand that. I think it's like number two in their 12-step process.
Right, to realize that you have to ask for help. We are...
From a higher power, it says.
From a higher power. And that is exactly what Christianity claims, is that we fell down.
Yes.
And we could not get out of this dark little hole that we were in, except through the help of God.
So without that help, and without that relationship, which is necessary for the help, then we lose our identity.
Yes.
Human beings.
Yes. I think we become golems. We become owned by the things that we wish to possess, the things that we desire.
So then we find ourselves, we recognize who we are in right relationships.
In right relations, in those that we give of ourselves to others.
And God sort of gave us what those relationships are in a nutshell when He said, love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And here's also the thing here.
Yeah.
That's kind of wrong about these self-help books is that they have this belief that if we just know certain things, then we'll be all right. Knowledge is power.
Yeah.
And that's another grabbing sort of thing. But what I think the primary message of Christianity is having that relationship to the truth.
Yes.
A relationship that is a personal relationship. And we participate as human beings in that relationship by giving ourselves to other people.
And that, in a nutshell, you said the two sides of the coin, if you will, truth and love.
Right.
Because once you find the truth and you have a relationship with the truth, you are called to give yourself to it.
Yes. Absolutely. Can I give a plug for these books that I've
Go for it, and then we'll talk about the other way in the last couple of minutes.
Okay.
The other way to lose our identities.
Well, one of the things that Peter Kreef talks about, and I agree with him, is that for modern people, we can't tell the truth directly. We have to kind of tell the truth indirectly.
Why? Because moderns are so hell-bent on hiding from the truth?
Yes, absolutely. And so you kind of sneak the truth as the way you would kind of sneak a baby being fed,
yes.
you know, that doesn't want to eat that food. You got to kind of surprise them and put them out the spoon in their mouth before they actually think.
Maybe put a little sugar in it, too.
Put a little bit of sugar in it and stuff. So there are three books that I read in the past month. They were all written by Walker Percy.
Okay.
One was Love in the Ruins. That's his very first novel.
Mm.
And his sequel to that novel was called The Thanatos Syndrome. Both of them, and I told you before the show, both of them awakened in me a kind of a sense of lostness. And
you recognize more how lost you were.
I recognized more how lost I was, and I recognized the lostness of all of us within America.
Yes.
In the Western civilization.
How lost we have become, yes.
And the third book by Walker Percy is called Lost in the Cosmos, which is the last self-help book.
Yep.
And he was actually not giving any answers. in this self-help book. And it was irritating, but the whole point of it was is that for us to become aware of how lost we are in the cosmos. He points out at the very beginning, he points out Carl Sagan, who wrote a book about the cosmos, and he says, why is it we know so much about the universe around us, and we know so little about ourselves?
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think the reason is that we can't know ourselves in the same fashion that we know things.
Because there are two different kinds of knowledges.
Yes, there's a knowledge of self.
There's a
cognitive sort of knowledge, and there's a relational sort of knowledge.
Yes.
English doesn't divide the knowledge words, but
yes.
French and German, and I think Spanish, they have two kinds of knowledge.
Yes.
So the Bible speaks of knowing in a relational sense.
That's right.
You know, this is like Mary says, yeah. I haven't had sexual relationships with guys, but she uses the word knowing.
I have known not any man.
Right.
And, of course, Adam knew his wife, and they conceived Cain and then Abel.
Right.
So that relational knowledge is one kind of knowledge, and then there's the cognitive knowledge, which is a little more, what do you call it?
It's our recognition and understanding of things.
Yeah, from a distance, yeah.
From things. And so we can know things because things are less than persons.
Yeah.
But the only way that we really know persons is through a relational path.
So you can know about people.
Right.
But in order to know a person, it has to be within relationship.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, because we are relational beings. Let me just say one more thing about this notion of losing our identity, and off the point that you're making, and that is that the more radically individual we become post-enlightenment, the less we know ourselves, and the less we're able to understand who we are at all in the cosmos.
We become like little black holes, I think.
Yeah. And I think that this has really, in a sense, gone to the third gear in recent times with all of the utter confusion of what it means to be a human being that has been occurring, and that the media and academia have just taken the ball and rolled with it, so that an entire generation is being molded into believing that homosexual activity is okay and normal and good. Transgenderism is normal and healthy if you believe that you are somebody inside, even though it contradicts what your body is on the outside. And all of these other things that are going on, that, you know, a human being, just because you can't see them, they're in the womb, it's okay to kill them because nobody will miss them. We've gone off the deep end in contemporary times with our understanding of who and what we are.
Yes. Anthony Esselin, who was a professor at Providence College, and he moved to St. Thomas More, I believe.
Yeah.
He calls the sexual revolution the lonely revolution. And this is one of the things that are under the current. I keep on seeing articles of the increase in loneliness in Western society. We are so lonely that it hurts. And none of the things that we do to try to erase that holiness, that loneliness, that materialism, that kind of sexual debauchery, all these sorts of things aren't curing this loneliness that we feel. And in fact,
pornography.
We are, all these sorts of medicines that we are using, so to speak, are actually causing the problem.
They're poisons.
Worse.
Yeah.
They're poisons.
Yeah. So we are confused and we're lonely.
Yes, we don't know who we are.
And the answer is, the solution, the real medicine is?
The truth, having a relationship with the truth.
And who is the truth?
Jesus.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, absolutely.
And there's the answer. It's all in relationship. It's in who you know.
Yes, in who you know. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Bob, for giving us some hope in an otherwise rather dismal time in our culture's history. Thank you, Cindy, behind the glass. Cindy's Vinyl Vault is up next. You've been listening to Beneath the Surface, Paul Morano with Bob LeBlanc. Thank you very much, everybody. Have a great week, and keep that hope alive.
Redbox Media programming is brought to you by...
We want to help others, especially in places of strife, such as the Holy Land, where Christianity is dwindling by the day. But how to help? Here's an easy way. Buying products through the Holy Land gift shop. Every product you purchase at myfranciscan.org/shop helps Christians support their families and stay in the Holy Land. Olive wood, embroidery, spices, and many more authentic products from the Holy Land are available right now at myfranciscan.org/shop. The Holy Land Gift Shop, bringing the Holy Land home.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media. Find more about us at breadboxmedia.com.